lies potentially bad, evil, or destructive behavior.
Dr. Robert J. Lifton, leading American psychiatrist. His latest book, The Climate Swerve, Reflections on Mind, Hope, and Survival. That does it for our show. We want to wish Robbie Caron a very happy 10th anniversary with Democracy Now! And our speaking schedule this weekend, Juan Gonzalez speaks at noon today at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. I'll be speaking tonight at 8 p.m. in Albany at the SUNY Albany Symposium on Telling the Truth in a Post-Truth World, along with Bob Schieffer, historian Douglas Brinkley, and New York Times reporter Glenn Thrush. Then on Saturday, Juan Gonzalez will speaking at that same Albany Symposium at 11:30. Check our website for details. That does it for the show, Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Berk, Renee Feltz, Danita Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Caron, Hani Massoud, Tarina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Veg Fest, October 14th and 15th at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Portland Veg Fest celebrates plant-based living with special guest speaker, running legend Scott Urich, along with free food samples, health and nutrition speakers, chef demonstrations, fitness stage workouts, restaurants, films, and activities for kids and teens. Again, that's the Portland Veg Fest, Saturday, October 14th and Sunday, October 15th, at the Oregon Convention Center, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Clean Water Act Turns 45. The celebration will be held on Wednesday, October 18th at 6 p.m. at the Lorwood Public House and Brewery in Portland. The Clean Water Act has kept huge amounts of pollution out of our waterways and made significant progress towards the vision of fishable, drinkable, and swimmable waterways. Environment Oregon will be celebrating the Act's 45th anniversary with drinks, appetizers, and speakers. Again, that's the Clean Water Act Turns 45. Celebration on Wednesday, October 18th at 6 p.m. at the Laurelwood Public House and Brewery, 5115 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:02. Yeah, I think it's 5:02. There we go. It is 5:02. Coming up next is your Friday evening news.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News. The Trump administration has discontinued payments to insurers in the Affordable Care Act marketplace.
And a tornado touched down and damaged airplanes at the state airport in Aurora yesterday afternoon.
Oregon Representative Peter DeFazio wants to limit the president's ability to launch a nuclear attack on his own.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 13th, 2017, the 266th day of the Trump apocalypse. I'm Linda Olson-Osterland.
And I'm Reuben Lawrence. The death toll has risen to 31 in what fire officials are calling the deadliest week of wildfires in California's history. Over 3,500 homes and businesses have been destroyed in a series of fires that began in the wine country north of San Francisco last Sunday. The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection has estimated that over 220,000 acres have been burned statewide in the last week. This is an area larger than the city of Dallas, Texas. Over 8,000 firefighters, 70 helicopters, and 30 aircraft are attempting to bring fires in the state under control. Firefighters have been able to build control lines to halt the spread of a few of the fires, but 17 separate fires are still burning out of control. The National Weather Service reported that wind gusts had died down overnight, but the break is not expected to last long. High winds are expected to return this evening. Initially, over 1,100 people were listed as missing, but many have since been located, and officials are hopeful that the rest will be found once full communications are restored. Many of the fatalities were older individuals with limited mobility who were simply unable to escape the flames in time. But one of the victims was just 14 years old. The fires seemed to erupt out of nowhere on Sunday night and raced towards populated areas. Emergency workers said they were stunned at the speed with which it progressed. But authorities in Sonoma are already facing questions about whether they did enough to warn vulnerable residents. In the meantime, sheriff's deputies continue to sift through the ashes, hoping that there are no additional victims.
Firefighters in Oregon are confident that they are well on their way to containing two major wildfires. The U.S. Forest Service reports that the Chetco Bar fire is nearly fully contained. That fire began on July 12th in the southwest corner of the state and has burned nearly 200,000 acres, more land than the city of Chicago. A month ago, the fire was only 5% contained, but recent rains have helped the 90 firefighters on the scene bring the fire under control. Closer to Portland, the Forest Service reports that the Eagle Creek fire is now 50% contained. The fire has burned 48,000 acres since it started on September 2nd, but firefighters are optimistic that there will be minimal additional growth. In all, there are a total of 31 active fires currently burning across Oregon.
Yesterday, Stephen Joseph Klopp, a 35-year-old homeless man who spat at and yelled racist insults at a 22-year-old Portland State University graduate and her parents, was sentenced to 1.5 years in prison. Multnomah County Circuit Judge Cheryl Albrecht also sentenced Klopp to 3 years of probation for the confrontation. In addition to jail time and probation, Judge Albrecht also ordered Klopp to compose a detailed letter of apology to the woman and her parents. The young woman told local law enforcement that she grew up in India and came to the United States for college, and that her parents were in town to celebrate her graduation. Klopp approached them while they were riding the MAX through downtown Portland at about 12:30 a.m. and began telling them that they needed to get out of the U.S. while spitting on them. Last month, Klopp pleaded guilty to second-degree intimidation and acknowledged that he targeted another person because of that person's, quote, race, color, or national origin, end quote, but said the MAX encounter was blown out of proportion. This is not Klopp's first run-in with the law. At the time of the racist assault, he was on probation for a 2016 incident where he threw a garbage can at a TriMet bus.
One of the major concerns when Donald Trump was sworn in as president was that he would have unlimited authority to launch a nuclear attack. The Atomic Energy Act of 1946 says that the president, and only the president, can use the nuclear arsenal whenever he decides to do so. At the time the law was written, the fear was not that we'd have an unstable president, but that we'd have overzealous or trigger-happy generals. But times change, and Oregon Democratic Congressman Peter DeFazio worries that there is nothing that can stop our volatile current president from turning an early morning tweet into a nuclear missile launch. He has introduced a bill that would require that the president get the approval of Congress before he commits troops or authorizes a missile launch. The bill would allow an exception in the case of a direct attack on the United States. This is not the first time that DeFazio has attempted to limit the president's authority to start a war, but last week's New York Times interview with Tennessee Senator Bob Corker caused DeFazio, quote, tremendous concern, end quote, and he decided that it was time to reintroduce his bill. In a speech on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives, DeFazio stated that Congress could send a message to Trump that, quote, he does not have the authority to wake up one morning and tweet an attack against another country, end quote. He also reminded his fellow representatives that, quote, the Constitution is clear. Congress retains the power to declare war, end quote. At this time, however, it appears unlikely that DeFazio's bill will get a vote.
Oregon Representative Peter DeFaggio is not the only one worried about the 45th president's ability to launch a nuclear strike on a whim. KBOO's Ray Bodwell has this commentary.
I was 10 years old when the Cuban Missile Crisis happened. At the time, I don't think I understood the seriousness. All I remember is being told to go outside and play while my parents were glued to the TV in wide-eyed horror. Many people think that the crisis ended because a U.S. Navy blockade prevented the Soviet Union from delivering nuclear missiles to Cuba. But what actually ended the crisis was a negotiation that resulted from that blockade. Because of those negotiations, the Soviets removed their bombers and missiles from Cuba, and in return, the United States pledged not to invade Cuba again and to remove our nuclear missiles that were deployed in Turkey and aimed at the USSR. The crisis pointed out the need for a quick, clear, and direct communication between Washington and Moscow, and as a result, a direct telephone connection, referred to as the hotline, was installed between the White House and the Kremlin. Most experts and historians now agree that we are as close and possibly even closer to a nuclear war than we were during the Cuban Missile Crisis. But there is no hotline between Washington and Pyongyang, North Korea. In fact, there are no direct communications of any kind between the two countries. Unless, of course, you think of Twitter as direct communication. The United States madman in chief has spent the last few months taunting and threatening the North Korean madman in chief in the misguided belief that he can force him to give up his nuclear program. Our madman even told his own Secretary of State that he was, quote, wasting his time, end quote, trying to defuse the situation by opening up a dialogue with their madmen. Instead, our madman threatened their madman with total destruction and then went ahead with a joint military maneuver and a show of force by flying U.S. bombers over the Korean Peninsula. These acts have reinforced their madman's belief that the very survival of his regime depends on his ability to arm himself with nuclear weapons. And sadly, it's not just their madman who believes this. Apparently, the average North Korean has come to believe it as well. Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times was allowed to visit Pyongyang recently and found that the North Koreans he spoke to actually believe our madman's threat to totally destroy North Korea. If a war actually erupts between the U.S. and North Korea, it really won't matter who starts it. Stanford University has estimated that 1 million people would die the first day. They'll die in North Korea, they'll die in South Korea, they'll die in Japan, and maybe even in the U.S. Ultimately, North Korea will lose, but at the cost of millions of innocent lives and the potential release of radiation on a scale never before seen. The U.S. and other countries have spent the last decade trying to prevent North Korea from developing nuclear weapons, but we have failed, and now the U.S. and the rest of the world has to learn how to live with that. Our madman's threatening rhetoric must be scaled back. Cooler heads must prevail, and an understanding must be reached. Donald Trump must accept the fact that he is no longer the only madman in chief with nuclear weapons. And the United States Congress has to end his authority to launch a nuclear strike on his own. And that must happen quickly, because our madman in chief's behavior gets more erratic day by day. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
Tornado warnings were issued for Clackamas County yesterday afternoon, and a tornado reportedly was sighted in Aurora. Witnesses reported intense thunder and lightning and said that the rain was blowing sideways in sheets. Others spoke of marble-sized hail. The National Weather Service said that an F0 tornado with peak winds of 65 to 70 miles per hour touched down at around 3:40 p.m. The Aurora Fire Department said that two planes broke free from their tie-downs and were flipped over, and that several others appeared to have been moved from their original spots. Students at Malala High School were asked to shelter in place until the tornado warning was lifted at 4:15. Although rare, tornadoes are not unheard of in Oregon. In October of 2016, an F2 tornado came ashore in downtown Manzanita, causing over $1 million in damage. And in 1972, an F3 tornado struck Portland, killing six people. It was the deadliest tornado ever recorded in the Northwest.
Yesterday, Mayor Ted Wheeler and Commissioner Amanda Fritz held a press conference to announce that IndyCar racing will be returning to Portland next year. In addition to the elected officials, the City Hall press event featured an Indy car raced by Graham Rahal, who was also present. The new race will be called the Portland Grand Prix and will be held over the Labor Day weekend, August 31st to September 2nd, 2018. In making the announcement, Mayor Wheeler said, quote, "The return of Indy car racing to Portland will give us terrific international exposure, a great deal of revenue, new jobs, and an exciting experience for race fans," end quote. Portland began hosting Indy car racing in 1984, and the race was an annual event until 2007, when financial difficulties resulted in forced Champ Car World Series, the previous sponsor, going out of business. The new race is managed by IndyCar Auto Racing, which also manages the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indianapolis 500. Commissioner Fritz said, quote, It is very exciting to see Indy car racing coming back to the Rose City. An event of this magnitude means $12 million to $15 million in revenue to the city, scores of jobs, and an exciting weekend of racing with new cars using clean-burning ethanol for fuel," end quote. Officials also pointed out that no public money will be required from the City of Portland to stage the event.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Native American Calling at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather calls for a sunny day with high of about 60. East of the Cascades and Hood River, you can expect similar conditions. On this date in 1999, the U.S. Senate rejected the ratification of the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. The treaty is a global ban on nuclear explosive testing and was seen as the final step in a vision laid out 50 years ago by President John F. Kennedy. The treaty will become legally binding when all the countries that participated in the negotiations between 1994 and 1996 had possessed nuclear power reactors at that time, signed the treaty. China, Egypt, Iran, Israel, and the United States have signed but not ratified the treaty. India, North Korea, and Pakistan have not signed it. Today's quote comes from former President Kennedy, who said, quote, "Every man, woman, and child lives under a nuclear sword of Damocles. The weapons of war must be abolished before they abolish us. The logical place to begin is a treaty assuring the end of nuclear tests of all kinds."
Late yesterday, the White House announced that it was discontinuing subsidies to insurers that help keep health insurance affordable for low-income Americans who buy their insurance in the Obamacare marketplaces. As a result of the move, the government will not be making a payment to insurers that had been scheduled for October 18th. Trump made the decision to cut off the payments, even though several advisors warned him that doing so could have drastic consequences and create havoc in the individual insurance market. Earlier today, the two main trade associations from the health insurance industry issued a rare joint statement. They described the subsidies as, quote, critical, and said that without them, there would be fewer consumer choices, prices would rise, and the Obamacare marketplace would be destabilized. The Congressional Budget Office has projected that eliminating the payments to the insurance companies will actually increase the deficit by $6 billion in 2018. The CBO pointed out that federal subsidies for many Americans covered under Obamacare rise when their premiums increase. Democrats referred to Trump's decision as spiteful, and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said, quote, "What he is doing is deadly. It's not only destructive, but deadly," end quote. Recent polls show that the administration's actions defy public opinion and that the majority of Americans believe the government should continue to make payments that stabilize insurance marketplaces.
The president's decision to discontinue payments to insurance companies was not the only assault he made on Obamacare yesterday. Earlier in the day, he had signed an executive order to allow small businesses and other groups to band together to buy health insurance through what are known as association health plans. These plans do not have to follow the same minimum benefit standard rules as Obamacare. But experts warn that healthy people might join cheaper plans, leaving only sick people on Obamacare plans. This would lead to a spike in premiums or simply cause insurers to abandon the market. In a statement on Thursday, Trump said that he was starting the process to repeal Obamacare. He claimed that these would be the, quote, first steps to providing millions of Americans with Obamacare relief, end quote. But Democrats warn that yesterday's orders are part of Trump's larger plan to sabotage this health care law and accomplish on his own what Congress could not do.
Today's report from Climate Connections looks at how global warming is affecting apple crops.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Near the small town of Galesville, Wisconsin, the state's oldest apple orchard has been in business for more than a century. This year, for the first time, Sasha Orchards invested in crop insurance. The reason? Climate change.
No question about it. It's the number one factor.
VP of Operations Scott Key says global warming threatens apple crops in several ways. For one thing, early warm springs can trick trees into blossoming before the cold weather is gone for good.
Last year, 2016, we had the most devastating spring frost that we've ever had. We lost about 75% of our entire crop.
And extreme rain events are growing more common. One day in July,
we received 12 inches of rain and received those 12 inches in a 6 to 8 hour period.
Flooded fields make orchard maintenance harder. Wet weather also promotes insects and fungus growth. Crop insurance can help soften any financial blows, and orchard staff is working to adapt to the changing conditions by growing varieties that thrive in warmer weather. Key says these steps will help ensure the quality of the orchard's crops.
We are known for producing the highest quality, most flavorful apple in Wisconsin.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Some Northwest tribes are asking for a name change of Dead Indian Memorial Road. Brian Bull reports.
Recently in Medford, Oregon, commissioners held a public hearing on Dead Indian Memorial Road. Critics say the name is offensive and has been since the 1850s when the road was built. Settlers found two dead Native Americans on the site, and the name has stuck since. Perry Choktoot is the Klamath Tribe's Director for Culture and Heritage. He says back in the 1990s, when it was simply known as Dead Indian Road, tribal members talked to officials about renaming it Memorial Road.
And they said, oh, okay, no problem. And then it became Dead Indian Memorial Road. And I'm going to ask again from the Klamath Tribes to remove the words Dead Indian. If you look around the United States, you don't see too many roads saying Dead White Guy Road.
Choktoot hopes this time the county renames it Memorial Road. A roads and parks official says he gets regular complaints about the road's current name from locals as well as tourists. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
A South Dakota high school has forfeited homecoming events after racist and derogatory comments surfaced on social media following a homecoming tradition. Lee Strubinger has more.
Wednesday night, pictures started surfacing of Sturgis Brown High School students smashing a spray-painted car with sledgehammers. On the car was the statement, "Go back to the res." School officials condemned the apparent reference to Sturgis Brown's football homecoming opponent, Pine Ridge High School. Pete Wilson is the principal of Sturgis Brown. He says the derogatory remarks towards Native Americans are disheartening to both Sturgis Brown High School and the Meade County School District.
We are disappointed in the actions of our students. By no means do we support the actions or behaviors of what happened. And I want to express my apology to the Pine Ridge School community, families, as well as all schools in the state of South Dakota.
Wilson says some pictures were taken on a school lot, but that the event took place elsewhere. He says the district is taking steps to educate students about Native culture going forward.
we need to do a better job, not only in our school, but the whole state of South Dakota, to encourage more cultural awareness. And one of our goals moving forward is the cultural awareness from a K-12 standpoint.
Wilson says this was not a school-sponsored event. I'm Lee Strupinger in Rapid City, South Dakota.
In Lawrence, Kansas, not only did the city celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day this week, but also, as Rhonda Lavaldo reports, a tribal college was recognized.
Haskell has always been an open campus to anyone to visit, but many still feel the tribal college is off limits. With historic ties and cultural events, Professor Dr. Eric Anderson says the campus will hopefully get more visitors with this proclamation of Haskell Indian Nations University Week.
I think there is an impression that you can't come out to Haskell in the same way that maybe people are always up on KU's campus. Getting that word out there, as well as doing campus events, will give an opportunity for people to feel welcome.
Haskell sophomore William Wilkinson echoed the sentiments of building on a relationship with the citizens of Lawrence.
Haskell's not like an average university like KU. It has diversity, it has deep history, and with the city of Lawrence recognizing this week as Haskell Indian Nations Week, I feel like it tightens the gap between Lawrence citizens and the students at Haskell, and I feel like that this week is just one more step towards, I guess, a more connected and robust relationship.
As the Haskell community celebrates its 91st homecoming event, they hope the people of Lawrence feel they can take part in their festivities. This is Rhonda Lavaldo.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
If you plan to travel by air soon, you may need more than just a driver's license for identification. In 2005, the Real ID Act went into effect. The law, which requires every state to issue driver's licenses that conform to a national standard, making it easier for law enforcement and Homeland Security officers to confirm that every motorist is who they say they are. The Real ID Act was drafted in response to the September 11 terrorist attacks on the U.S. after it was discovered that hijackers easily obtained fraudulent identification, including U.S. driver's licenses. The Department of Homeland Security rolled the program out with four intentional phases, the last affecting airline travel. Nine states have yet to upgrade their driver's license processes to comply with the national standard that requires an applicant to confirm their identity with a birth certificate or passport. Those states are Washington, South Carolina, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma, Montana, Missouri, Minnesota, Maine, and Kentucky. In January of next year, travelers from those states will be required to show an alternative TSA-approved identification to board a plane. Acceptable ID includes a passport or passport card, global entry card, U.S. military ID, airline or airport-issued ID, federally recognized tribal-issued photo ID.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. The producer for this evening's broadcast is Ray Bodwell. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zelos Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterland.
And I'm Ruben Lawrence. Coming up on Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on More Talk Radio, Cecil and Celeste welcome your calls. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the great issues of our time and goes where corporate media fears to tread. At 10 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks to Dominic Della Sala, president and chief scientist of the Geos Institute in Ashland, about how to reconcile the need for forests to burn with the horrific reality in our face in the Columbia Gorge and California wine country. At 11, Radio Zine looks at Trump's world of alternative facts and how an untold history of the black press resonates today. They'll also look at the March for Racial Justice, ICE raids targeting sanctuary cities, and protests during the Wells Fargo testimony on Capitol Hill. KABU keeps you informed, and you can get involved. Go to KABU.fm and click on Donate to become a member today. Thank you for listening, and have a good evening. Good night, Linda.
Good night, Ruben. Good night, Jenna.
Good night, everybody.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, a human rights nightmare continues to unfold in Myanmar as hundreds of thousands of Rohingya flee what a new UN report calls coordinated and systemic attacks by security forces and Buddhist mobs, only to arrive, if they arrive, to horrific conditions in refugee camps in Bangladesh. What human rights groups have called the ethnic cleansing of the religious and linguistic minority, the Myanmar government of Aung San Suu Kyi calls clearance operations.